Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 project here on the Nerd Party Network, where me and Dallas King make our way through the A24 filmography and along the way bring you interviews with the talent involved in front of and behind the camera. In the latest of our series of interviews with the cast of Kelly Reichardt's First Cow, I'm joined by Mitchell Saddleback, who plays the Chief Factor's servant. Thanks so much to Mitchell for joining me. It was a real pleasure to chat with him, and I hope you too will enjoy this interview. Welcome to the show. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, and when did your interest in acting and performing begin?
Mitchell Saddleback of Seagustin. Hello, my name is Mitchell Saddleback. I am from the Samson Cree Nation in Musqueaches, Alberta. I live in the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh in Vancouver, Canada. That's where I'm coming to you live from. I live in East Van. I grew up in Alberta, and at a very young age, I started doing improv competitions and in high school, and like kind of word got around, and my counselor in high school actually knew an agent out of Edmonton, and she'd heard about my big win at this improv competition. I won a golden spatula. She introduced me to her husband's friend, who is an agent, and I instantly started getting auditions, and I moved to Vancouver out of high school and to pursue stand-up comedy and filmmaking. And I kind of took a break from acting, and my life kind of got really complicated and hard, and I kind of found myself in like a really dark place. And I reached out to my agent and asked him if he would like to represent me again. And we started getting auditions, and then we started getting roles in the last couple of years, and it's been really exciting. And right now I'm actually working on my own projects with some friends, so it's been really cool to go from wanting to have like roles in movies to writing roles in movies and TV shows. And yeah, I've just been kind of surrounding myself with art for the last decade, and it's been really helpful for me.
You sound like someone that's really involved in the creative industry in quite a few different ways. What kind of artists or filmmakers or talent inspired you?
I grew up, I was related to the late, great Gordon Tootoosis. He was in a lot of movies and TV shows growing up. He's actually my Muslim, my grandfather. And just kind of growing up, knowing that I was related to somebody who was in movies, and I got to see him in like the X-Files, and I never got to actually meet him before he passed away. But that kind of like, just watching movies too, like growing up, I was so inspired by film and movies, and I've always loved movies. We'd always go rent movies growing up at like they don't exist anymore, but like the Blockbuster and the Video Update. We would just rent so many movies, and I remember watching the Blair Witch Project when I was a little kid, and it just kind of blew my mind away, is seeing like that could be a movie. Like that could be a movie. Like I want to be a part of this somehow. And I always tell my brother, like, I love film so much that sometimes I show up in them.
I've got to relate to you there. I also rented Blair Witch Project from Blockbuster when I was younger. So, yeah, that's a nice shared experience of a very similar generation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really blew my mind. And, like, you know, growing up, like, watching even, like, short films and just, you know, I watched everything. I just love film so much.
Kind of Canada is one of those things that continues to grow. You touch on the X-Files, for example. I remembered the first few six seasons, I think, shot in Canada, and was it returned when the revival, and it seems to be a continuing place where shows are coming north of the border to shoot. Is it an exciting kind of place to be in Vancouver for projects like that as an actor? Is it becoming a much more competitive environment?
I mean, moving to Vancouver was super wise in terms of like all the different kind of outlets I have here. I find it really like there's a lot of things that shoot here. Like I'll be watching commercials or like movies, and I would recognize downtown, like trying to be Seattle or like trying to be New York. And yeah, Vancouver's like a hot spot for film and television. Like, I always walk around. Like I remember walking around downtown, and all of a sudden I turned a corner, and it was snowing. And I was in a car commercial, and I was like, "Whoa! I walked onto a set here accidentally." I find it to be the community here is kind of small in terms of the indigenous artists and actors and stuff. Like it's a very small community, so we all kind of heard about each other or know each other, or we meet each other at events. And I definitely know everybody personally who I go up to auditions against, and like, we contacted each other and we're like, dude, we got this audition, and we help each other, and we always tell each other like, good luck, man, like kill it, like I hope one of us gets this. And yeah, it's a small community, and it's really we're really supportive of each other.
That's amazing. For those whose kind of first introduction to you was First Cow, you've got a range of other work. You've been in a Liam Neeson action movie, you've worked on a range of your own projects and performance art. What would you kind of recommend people to check out, Mitchell?
Well, definitely check out First Cow. It's a really beautiful film. Like I was so surprised. Kelly, actually, the director, invited me to go out to Portland again and watch it for the first time before it came out. I think it was not last August, but the August before. And it was so beautiful watching that film. Because I worked on the film for maybe like 2 weeks, and there was so much that I wasn't there for, but like as soon as the first shot opened up, I was like, this is a beautiful film. This is a really beautiful, I'm so happy to be a part of this. Like it's definitely First Cow. I love that movie so much. Like I have a couple of DVDs that I give to people now, and I just like, please check this movie out. Like it's really like it just when the pandemic happened and First Cow kind of got delayed, like I kind of thought it was gonna go straight to straight to streaming or something like that. And we actually, me and my family, they did like a short run in theaters, and my whole family, we got to go and watch it together, and it was a
Amazing.
really cool experience. But I also do like slam poetry. I'm a spoken word artist. Like you can, I think you can YouTube my name, and a few of my poems will come out. And I do stand up comedy. I have a showcase coming out at the end of the month. I think it's going to be online. I will get the information on that soon. But yeah, I don't know. Cold Pursuit was a really, really fun film to be a part of too. I would like that movie even if I wasn't in it. So I got a really cool role in that. But yeah, I don't know. I just hope to keep creating and keep making my own work, and keep telling stories and helping tell other people's stories. Me and my friends, we have a show that we filmed, and we just got to do our reshoots because COVID kind of pushed our reshoots way back. But it's a horror comedy called The Bannicking that is going to be on the CBC Gem soon, and it's a really fun. I have a really fun role in that, and I was one of the co-writers, and we just kind of helped make it come alive, and it's a really fun project. I can't wait for people to see
Sounds like there's a hell of a lot of there for people to check out. When did
it.
you first hear about First Cow, and did it feel like a huge opportunity when you heard about this project?
It's funny when First Cow came about, I actually didn't have anyone to help me audition, which is a problem that like I have sometimes of finding someone to read for me. And I couldn't get anyone to read for me for the deadline. And I just the deadline came and passed, and I was back home, and my agent messaged me, and he said, "Hey, they really want to see your First Cow audition. They requested you again." And I was, "Okay, well, if they requested me, I'll go out of my way to do it." So I got my nieces, they were 7 and 8 at the time, to read my First Cow audition for me. And I Spoiler, I don't know if you've seen the movie, like if you're reading this and are hearing this and you've seen the movie, but there's a scene when my character finds the two main characters hiding in a tree. And that was my audition scene. And my nieces read it for me. And there's like a scene when a branch falls, and my niece had like Doritos and she was like crunching them because she wanted to make unauthentic branch crunching sound. And it was just such a funny little audition that we did. And I sent it off and I didn't hear anything back for a while. And my agent called me and he's like, "Hey, we got it." I was so happy because it was like my second role after Cold Pursuit, and I was just like, I was on top of the world. I haven't heard of like I didn't know anything about the project going into it. I just knew that it was based off of a book. I actually bought the book and read it in a couple nights while I went to go film it. But when I was back kind of back home, and my uncle actually passed away. He had black mold in his house and it got into his lungs. And I was kind of nervous because I was supposed to leave to Portland, Oregon to go film the movie. But my uncle passed away, so I had to go to his wake. So I contacted them and said, "Do you mind if I come a day later?" And they were so nice, they were so accommodating. And I got to go home, meet my family, and have this a ceremony for my uncle. And then like the next day I had to pack my bags and travel to Portland. And everyone was super nice, and everyone who kind of like knew why I was there a day late came up and gave their condolences. And it was such a cute little family, like they've been already working for a month, and the crew and everyone just got along so well, and they really welcomed me onto set. And I just made try my best to make everyone laugh.
Well, it's one of those things. I'm now, when I watch First Cow again in the future, I'm never going to be able to watch that scene of that tree collapsing without thinking of a bag of Doritos. Now that's going to be in my head
Right,
rent free.
right,
That's
right.
brilliant.
That's
Like from the mouth of angels, that is incredible. For like only a young kid could think of something like that.
I know, she's so wonderful. When she was like, "Can I do this?" And I was like, "Absolutely, you can."
How kind of familiar are you with sort of Kelly's work when you heard, being linked with a Kelly Reichardt film? Was she someone you went, "Oh, I know her work," or was she someone that you were a bit unfamiliar with?
When I heard her name, I didn't actually, it didn't click. I have seen certain women. Actually, they had just put Certain Women on Netflix, like maybe like a month before I got the part, and I happened to watch it, and I had no, I didn't connect the two, because when I got the audition, I immediately looked up everybody involved and seeing what their range of like projects are, and Kelly's name and a Certain Women. I was shocked. I was like, "Oh my God, I just saw this last week. I'm this is so like serendipitous, like." It's surreal. Like every project is really surreal. It feels like a dream.
What was
And
it
I
like?
kind of treat it as so.
What was it like when you started doing that research and you're like, "Oh my God, it's this cast and these people are so famous," or it's like an A24 film? What kind of goes through your head is like, does a bit of pressure come in, or do you like, "Oh, this is actually really amazing. I'm going to be mixing it with these guys. I'm viewed as good enough to be part of this team."
When I get an audition and get a role, it feels very surreal, and it doesn't feel real. It feels like a dream. And I remember when I got the role, the only person I knew was Kelly. I didn't know who was on the cast. Usually you don't know. Well, in my experience, you don't know who's in the cast until you get into the office and you see the big board of all the headshots. And I got there. I got to Portland kind of late, and I went to my fitting, and I went into the office, and I looked at the board, and I saw all these people that I admire and love and seen in other projects. Ewan Bremmer. There's the first face I saw was Ewan Bremmer. I was like, "Oh my God, it's Spud! I get to meet Spud from Trainspotting." And then I saw Gary Farmer, and when I saw Gary Farmer, I almost started crying because Gary Farmer is like. Like I grew up watching Gary Farmer, like I think of him as like my own dad or uncle, you know, like he's played that character so well in like Smoke Signals and like Powwow Highway is one of my favorite movies of all time. So seeing him on the board, I immediately called my mom and I was just like, I was shaking. I was like, oh my God, Gary Farmer's in this movie. And we just had like a little celebration, and I didn't actually know that Toby Jones was in the movie, because he wasn't on the board. I didn't know Toby Jones was in the movie until the morning we were driving to set and he jumped in the vehicle, and I looked at him and was like, oh, this guy looks so familiar. Who is he? And his name didn't click in my head until about halfway into the halfway when onto the when we're getting to the set, and all these projects have just started flying. I was like, I just saw you in this. I just thought like I was fanboying hardcore on the set. Like there was just so many people that I just appreciated being around.
What did Kelly want from you for kind of the role of the chief actor servant? Was she quite clear about what she was looking for from you, or was it very much kind of like, we're hiring you, you know, it's all about what you can bring?
Kelly's was like her approach to every single scene was so delicate and was so like we created this whole backstory to my character, you know, and she's so warm in how she's like she directs, and like she would tell me like a like tiny little like there's one scene like my favorite scene in the movie when the camera's kind of going back and forth and I'm walking through this old-timey house, and I'm extinguishing all the candles that are around, and just the way she like she explained to me that thing that I was holding. I can't remember what they're called, the little cup thing that like lights out a candle. Like she was like, this is like, you know, this is something that was passed down to you, and like we just had this whole cool little even my wardrobe too, like we were talking about my wardrobe and my boots, and she was talking about my language, and like yeah, she was just very hands-on, and I just loved watching her work. And like, you know, like I was watching her talk to Gary Farmer, and I was just observing. I just felt like a fly on the wall, and I just felt so honored to be a part of the conversation. We filmed in this like old house that was probably built in like the 1830s, and it was just felt really cool to be like transported into that era. Like, you know, I didn't even look at my phone. Like I forgot how phones worked. I was just wearing old-timey clothes and in an old-timey house, and I was trying to spook people out standing in corners trying to be like a ghost. But yeah, it was just Kelly is just very she's a pro. And I'm just so honored to be able to have worked with her.
Before you get to your first day on set, how do you prepare for a role like that? Are you someone that dives into the history books? Obviously, you touched on you'd read the book. How do you sort of prepare for a role like this, which is a mixture of kind of historical and but also fictional?
When I first got the role and I read the book and I kind of got the idea of the setting, I watched a few documentaries about that era. I really kind of on set, you know, as soon as I got my boots on and that lovely wardrobe, and I got to walk around the set and kind of put myself in that mindset of like, okay, you're right now we're in the 1830s. You know, money doesn't really exist right now, and I just thought about my backstory that Kelly gave me, and Lily Gladstone too. Me and Lily Gladstone really connected and talked about, you know, what our characters, who our characters were. We talked about you know, like our relationship together, our characters' relationship together, and yeah, I just kind of like immersed myself in this world, and it was so much fun to live back in the 1800s. You know, I was just doing I just did a play that's like a Cree telling of Macbeth. So instead
Wow.
of like instead of a king, it's a chief, and it's really beautiful. It's Powagan Macbeth, it was called. Really beautiful play, and that take place in the 1800s, and like doing First Cow and kind of like putting myself in that place really helped me with this play. We went on tour. We toured around Alberta and Treaty 6, and yeah, it was such a beautiful kind of thing that I can tune into now of like living back then. Like I know how the trees smell, and I know how the grass feels. It feels different than it does right now. Like it's just another world that's cool to tap into.
It's incredible. I'd love to see your version of the Scottish play. That sounds like a really unique version. You see, with Macbeth, there seems to be so many variations over it. That sounds like a really cool one.
It was a really beautiful project. We get to speak our language. It's my language too. I speak Cree, Nehiwa, and doing that project, I got to learn my language, a bit of my language. You know, something that was like kind of lost for me, and it was just such a healing project to be a part of, and to go into these communities and to see elders smile because their language is being said on a stage, and to see the youth smile and recognize words that they know. And it was just so, oh God, I'm gonna cry. So beautiful to see, just, 100 years ago that would have been illegal. And to be able to do that and professionally and be loud, to be indigenous and loud and in front of, hundreds of people, and yeah, it was such a healing project to be a part of, and it's a beautiful story, and I can't wait to get back to it, because we were supposed to go to Northwest Territories, and then our tour got cut short. But yeah, that's gonna pick up sometime soon, and there's a lot of they're putting a lot of work into that one, so you're gonna hear more about that one in the future, I think.
Absolutely. I hope everyone will be following you on social media to stay up to date with that. And I'm crossing my fingers that someone records it and it can be shared. I'd love to see that here in the UK. And I can see clearly on your face what a passion project that is for you. So yeah, I'm excited for you and for the audiences that are going to get to see it, Mitchell. You touched on it that you developed this backstory for your character. What was that kind of backstory like? That how did you view that he came into the service of Toby Jones as chief factor?
My character, oh geez, I we had a name. I can't remember what the name was. But my characters, we came up with the story that my whole family kind of died, and Toby Jones kind of found me and hired me. We have this weird kind of like not father son relationship, but like servant master kind of relationship. And I feel like my character likes being like fancy. I kind of, just the way I kind of like stand and like enter a room, like my character really wanted to emulate, fanciness, because Toby Jones comes from this lavish lifestyle, and he's always has these like super fancy people around, and I think my character really wanted to like emulate that and be fancy.
Kind of anglicized in a way.
And we just like we had this really beautiful scene when my character gets to go into his room and kind of be himself, and he starts playing this little wooden game, and I just love that scene so much, because it just reminds me so much of myself, because like I also video game I also play video games, and like that it just that character just totally turned into me at that moment, because like I'm always gaming even in 1830.
What was that residence like to play in as a set? How did it take quite a bit of time to get there, and what was it like to be on a set like that?
Yeah, so we filmed the movie in Portland, Oregon, in the surrounding area, and the locations were kind of in the middle of nowhere. I could couldn't even tell you where they were. I would just get into the vehicle and we'd drive into the country and come across this really old-timey house that's kind of like secluded, but it's like a heritage house. And we filmed there, and we filmed in the woods a bit. And like the geography of the scene is kind of all over the place, but like one the house there's actually there was actually like two different versions of the house, the one that was from a distance and one that was like the house that we walk out of. I just loved like seeing how they put that kind of together, how they filmed one thing at one certain angle and filmed something at another angle, and it came together to make like a big house. But yeah, the set was it was very small. The crew was very small, and everything, like everybody like knew each other, and we all knew each other by like our first names. And it was kind of like a nice little like getaway, a nice little family that I got to hang out with for a couple of weeks. And even going back to and watching the movie again, we all kind of really connected, and I saw all the drivers, and we all had like a good time in Portland.
Was it a challenge shooting in sort of the Pacific Northwest, or am I kind of right that it feels like a lot like Vancouver, that kind of climate and location?
Yeah, it's very similar to Vancouver. Like the climate, it got cold at night. So we hung out by the heaters a lot because we had a bunch of night shoots. But yeah, it's just so beautiful. It's like you're in a painting when in Portland, Oregon, you know? It's just, and I love that place, and I can't wait to go back and just explore a little bit more of it. When I was staying filming the movie, every single day I just walked farther and farther away from my hotel and just explored Portland. It was such a nice, like everyone there was so nice. People would just come up to me and just be like, "How is your day going?" And you don't really get that in Vancouver.
It's a very interesting scene when we're first introduced to you. There's a lot of awkward dynamics. It's slightly amusing, awkward. There's a bit of racism kind of going on. What was that kind of like to shoot that scene where there's a lot of different tones kind of going on?
Yeah, the scene when I'm introduced is so there's so many things going on in that scene. It's like just this orchestra of uncomfortable moments. And like in that scene, Toby Jones is having this conversation about like I think they're talking about like whipping a slave or something. And it's just this awkward conversation, and then Orion and our two main characters come in, and Orion speaks up, and everyone's just like, "Why is this guy speaking to us?" It was so it's just such an orchestra of like a bunch of people who are in the same room together, and there's just all these dynamics of Gary Farmer's in the scene, and his wife, Gary Farmer's wife, is in the scene, and they're speaking this language that like nobody speaks anymore. And it was just so beautiful to be able to hear Gary Farmer speak that language and just have this this conversation between these upper class men with these the natives and the soldier that they're having like a tea time with. And yeah, it's just such a clash of class in that scene. And it was just so fun to play off everybody, and everybody was just so in tune to the relationship between everybody in the scene.
It's one of those ones, it's one of the few scenes where you always think of First Cow as it's quite a quiet and intimate film. But that scene where we're introduced to you, it feels like every single player is involved in that. You've got your Toby Jones, Orion Lee, Scott Shepherd, Gary Farmer, Lily Gladstone, John McGarrow. what was it like to have all of them together on that kind of scene and watching how they act as someone like yourself that's just getting started in the industry? This is one of your first roles, to see some of these established actors. What were they like with you, and do they have any sort of good advice, and how do they kind of all work?
I am so blessed to have worked with all these wonderful people. To share the screen with all these people has been such a dream. You know, like I always tell people that I've already, my dream was to be in a movie, and I've done that. You know, like I've done my dream. That's all I wanted to do. Now my next dream is to like make stuff, but meeting everybody for the first time was so fun. I actually probably hung out with Ewan Bremmer most, just because we were like, you know, in the same scene. So, and we were in the same vehicles driving, and, Gary Farmer, he was like, you know, he was like a dad on set. He came up to me and he told me to quit smoking, and I did. I don't smoke anymore. I was smoking a cigarette. He's like, you should quit smoking. I was like, okay, Dad. And he had some really good acting advice for me, and we talked about how we got into it, and he told me his how he got into it when he was younger, and we talked about, you know, Gordon Tootoosis and how they were really good friends. And how he was my Muslim. And Toby Jones had great actor advice for me. He told me to read Le Curie, the spy novels. He's like, you want to really tap into acting, read spy novels. And totally changed my life. And I totally understand acting in a different sense, and I was so blessed to be able to have conversations with these, like, just royalty to me, you know. Like I grew up watching all these people, and Scott Shepherd is hilarious. That dude, that guy is so funny, like on set, and just every time we said cut, he would just come and say something completely ridiculous. He was the only one walking around with a sword. All those people, all the players were so fun. And I learned so much from each and every single one of them. And, you know, just watching them work, and just watching, like Toby Jones, that whole monologue that he has at the beginning of that scene. I watched him read it once, say it, and then say it exactly how he said it on screen. And same with Gary Farmer. He's speaking another language, and he looked at it, said it, and then went and filmed it. And I was just like thinking, like, these guys are professionals. These guys are professionals. And, you know, I just happened to be like, why am I here? You know, how did I get here? It was such a fun, great learning experience for me. And I'm very honored to have, you know, been a part of it. Like, First Cow is such a beautiful film, and I hope more people see it. And I was so happy when they just put it on Crave in Canada. And over the last couple of months, I've been getting a lot of messages from a lot of people I grew up with, like a lot of people I went to high school with, like, oh my God, so I'm watching a movie and all of a sudden you show up. It's like, yeah, that's what I do now.
It seems to be, it's still making its way into the world. I was lucky enough to see it last July, but it only just came out in UK cinemas last month when the cinemas reopened here. So I'd seen it a couple of times at home on digital, but to be able to watch it with an audience was such a treat. And I suppose there's one member of the cast that we've completely not touched on that you've worked with, and that is the titular cow herself, Evie. What was your memories of working with the first cow herself?
Oh my goodness. Evie is one of the most beautiful, calming presence I've ever felt. The first day on set, we were driving, and it was a night shot. One of the first things we filmed actually was us running to go find out that someone has been mugging Evie. But I remember driving onto set and my window was down because it was like a little hot, and we were like just pulling up to set and I heard like moo, and my heart just started beating. I was like, oh my God, is that the first cow that I hear right now? And be like, you know, I can hear her mooing, I can hear like and people laughing, and walking down to set, you know, I had a flashlight and I was making sure not to like, you know, roll my ankle. Because I wanted to see this cow so bad. And there was a group of people around her, and she just has the most beautiful eyes, like so beautiful. And I went to pet her, and she like instantly, she loves pets. When nobody was petting her, she would moo and like ruin the take. So somebody always had to be with her and like, you know, love her. I really connected with that girl. She was so wonderful, and just so like she it was so fun watching her learn how to do stuff, like, you know, and just the way that they would position her, and she was just so willing to be an actor and such a diva. I connected with her so much that actually when I watched the film for the first time, and Cookie's having that conversation, like he's kind of talking to her while he's milking her, and he says to her like, I heard about your husband and that's really sad. When I heard that in theaters, that like I started crying, like I connected so, like, because I know that cow. After I filmed that movie, I stopped eating beef for like the long I could I it was just like I connected with that cow so much. I was crying about it, you know, like a year later watching this movie. And yeah, I just I hope she gets more movies.
Yeah, such a beautiful story. It made me laugh last week when I chatted with Orion about it. Like, what was his memory of Evie the cow? Yours is this beautiful story. His was like, she really liked to pee. And just like you told me the story about how she just was like, it's just like, just going and going and going. So, very different sides to the Evie character here. And I can relate. You know, I watched it in July, so really early in the pandemic and lockdown. And I remember just being really touched by that scene as well, where it's just like,
Yeah.
I heard about your husband, that intimacy. And I'm almost thinking now when I watch it that, you know, that tenderness, that stroking is what Evie the cow is also after. And I suppose it's kind of, you know, you can really see that reflected on the screen. Beautiful, beautiful scene. And I suppose you also got to work with another animal, the very stupid cat herself. What was it like shooting that scene with this cat that basically brings everything to complete drama?
The catalyst.
Yes, very well done. There's the comedian
Yeah,
side of you coming out there, Mitchell.
right. So that cat didn't like me. Yeah, there was the animal handler on set, wonderful lady. She just kind of gave me the rundown of you know, how to hold her. She was gentle. I shouldn't say she didn't like me. It was just because I was being kind of rough with her for that scene. We did that scene a couple of times. I couldn't get the throw right because I have to throw the cat out the window. And I was like, I really don't want to throw this cat, you guys. But they're like, no. Like she lands on this huge cushion thing. Like she didn't fall far. But like I'm trying to be like angry about it. So I was really happy with the ADR that they the Foley that they added in that scene, because it sounds like the cat like hits the ground and tumbles. Yeah, that cat was a cool little he was a cool cat. Like, you know, on set he'd come and hang out and pet him. He had like a cute little mustache and a mighty beard, just a cute face, you know. That was a really good scene. A lot of people tell me that that's their favorite scene. When you toss that cat, man, that's good stuff.
It's one of the things, there's just so much stress you get watching it. You just like, you know what's going to happen straight away. Just as soon as we start seeing you walking around the house, and it's like,
Right.
uh-oh, it's all going to come to a head, and it just keeps building. And then when you step outside, you're just like, on here, it's like the game's up, and it's just one of those things
Yeah.
you just go through that awkward ringer of like, oh, you just want them to get away with it. Like I'm almost shouting at your character in my head, like, just leave the cat, just stay inside, don't play
Leave,
with
yeah.
your video game.
Absolutely, yeah. There's I love the tension, all the tension in that scene is like watching it for the first time, I was like sweating. I was like, oh my God, I know I find them. I don't want to find them. Like, I'm connected to these characters right now. Like, yeah.
You
Stupid
obviously,
cat.
once you kind of think something's going down, you alert like Ewan Bremner's Lloyd and Jared Kosowski's Thomas. Did you enjoy working with those guys and my fellow Edinburgh boy, Spud?
Oh yeah, so much. Those two. Those two were really fun to hang out with. Like Ewan, we talked about Trainspotting, and we talked about film and movies. He was working on. I can't remember what he said the project was, but he was playing a magician. So he, the whole time on set, he was like doing card tricks and like all these cool things with cards. And I was, he was just so cool, you know? Listening to all of them talk about the industry and talk about past projects. And, you know, it was really cool seeing everybody, because they all kind of knew each other from like past projects and you know, the industry, and just seeing them interact and talk about, you know, Toby Jones talking about Iron Man and not Iron Man, Captain America, and Ewan Bremner, he was talking about he told me a story about working on Pearl Harbor and how they had to like train like soldiers for like a month. And the last day, he was like, "No, I am not coming in today." And he put down his gear, and he's like, "I am not coming to work. It is our last day. Yesterday was my last day. I am not working out today and doing this." But it's cool to like just to have like a backseat and listen to these pros talk about their own experiences in like these, you know, movies that I've grew up with. And
is that something that's now important for you now that you've worked on several movies, you're someone that's worked on the different projects, is about sharing and passing on that information, being someone that people look up to you and go, oh, if Mitchell can do it, I can do it, and learning from your experiences, good and bad?
Oh, absolutely. Like I always tell people, like, I growing up, I never had representation. I never saw myself on stage. I never saw myself on TV or in plays or even in music. Like, you know, like I never had representation. I've always wanted to be able to look on screen and see, you know, people that are like me, characters that are like me. And I think that's my main goal. And I feel like that's why I'm here on this planet, is to be representation for young Indigenous youth, to, you know, to be able to be on a stage and speak Cree or be on a big Hollywood movie and make people laugh and make people nervous, you know, like that is representation. And I hope that there's young Indigenous youth that see these projects and think to themselves, I could do that too, mm-hmm. because that's what I want. I want Indigenous youth to know that they can do whatever they want. If they want to go to the moon, they can go to the moon. You know, it's possible now. We live in a world where it's possible to be able to follow your dreams, like, you know, whether it be singing or dancing or drawing or painting or, you know, music and or fashion. Like, you know, like, this is such an exciting time to be an artist, but it's a more exciting time to be an Indigenous artist, because, you know, they're finally telling our stories, and we're finally being represented in TV, film, and in entertainment, you know. And watching this movie, it was so beautiful to see all the Indigenous scenes, like all these beautiful scenes of just really takes you back to a different time. And I just hope, you know, people watch it and want to make their own art too,
And has there been much of a, has there been a positive reaction within that community to something like First Cow and what it represents in your role?
Absolutely. A lot of people have reached out to me and thanked me for being a part of it, because you know it's an A24 movie, and like these it's such a like a lot of my friends a lot of my film friends are like they're so happy for me that I'm part of that family, and it's been a overwhelmingly positive feedback from this role and what the movie represents and what the movie says about, you know, about friendship and time and you know, business. Like it is a business movie, right? These guys are trying to make their way in such tough tough time. That's like, you know, like it's such a different world back then, and it's like a Western, but it's not a Western, you know. I believe Kelly described it as an anti-Western. It's just to be a part of it and to see the response, and like my nieces, my whole family, my nieces love the film. They helped me with the audition, and we were watching the movie in theaters. They were like, "This is our scene!" Like they were so excited to see that. And it was just excited for me to be able to see, because I have like four nieces, right? And one of the younger ones, we were all watching it at my brother's place, and we pointed at the TV and we're like, "Look, who's that?" And to see her look and to see her eyes get really big and to look at me and then look back at the TV and then look at me. And she was like, "Is that Uncle?" And we all, and like she just sat down and just watched the rest of the movie with us, and it was just like, you know, that's why I'm doing this. It's just like that stuff like that just makes my whole life just feel like I'm doing something super important and super good for, you know, the next generation.
That's wonderful. And you talked about seeing the film for the first time. What were your feelings going into watching that movie the first time? Was it excitement, nerves, anticipation? What was it like making that trip back to Portland to watch the film?
Me and my ex at the time drove out to Portland, and I was nervous the entire time. I was shaking the entire time because I didn't know what to expect. You know, I read the book, and the book is a little different than the movie. The book kind of, it's kind of two stories, kind of woven together. So I wasn't sure, if that's the approach they were going to do, or if it was just going to be about the cow actually. Cause I was only on the movie for 2 weeks, and then I left, and then the movie was made. But watching it for the first time was so, it was just so surreal and so I just felt like I was taken back to that time when we filmed it. And I was taken back to that place that I put myself in, to be able to film it. And yeah, really connected to it, and watching it, I was like, I'm a part of this. Like, look at this shot. That is beautiful. Look at the aspect ratio. It's like, you know, I've never seen anything like this. Like the long takes where you really get to like take in the scenery and take in this, like, you know, like the world, the music, like the first time I heard the music, I was so, it was so beautiful. And then like that was like a private screening that we had watched, and the movie came out almost a year later. But the first time I saw the trailer, you know, like seeing how they put that together is so beautiful. And it's surreal.
Has it been interesting, like, it's almost probably been like 2 years since you first saw the film. We're coming up on its anniversary when it was released on digital after its release was cut short. Has it been, you showed the artwork earlier on, has it been interesting seeing the cult or the love for First Cow continue to grow week on week as people discover it more or find it on streaming or it comes to their places in the world? And you see it on places like Etsy. There's artwork, there's posters, there's tote bags, there's, you know, cookies, you know, like oily cakes. People are making the food and drink from the film and talking about it. Here we are, we're chatting about it. Has it surprised you that the film has developed this huge life outside of the film with people?
Yeah, actually. Well, on set, I just kind of knew we were making something special on set. Like, just the way the love that Kelly was putting into absolutely every single detail. You know, the way I pick up a cup at one point and drink it, like just the absolute care that Kelly was putting into everything. I knew we were making something super special, and like everyone just had this glow and vibe about them. Like we're such a tight little, you know, group of people like coming together to make this piece of art. And I kind of knew it was going to be great. And watching it, I confirmed. I called my mom right away. I was like, "Mom, this movie's really beautiful. Like I've never seen anything like this. This is so beautiful." And you know, I've seen videos on like video essays on YouTube about certain shots of the movie, and you know, I've listened to podcasts and of people talking about the movie, and I'm not surprised that people love it. It's like, and it's only like the love of it's only getting bigger. But it is so, it's really beautiful to see how this has affected people. And, you know, it's a really, immersive film. Mm-hmm. And people get to experience it now, and I'm so excited because, you know, it took a while for it to come out, and I just really wanted people to see it. Like it's so beautiful.
Obviously, you touched on it. It's an A24 film. Have you got other favorite A24 films from their filmography?
Oh, so many. I love A24. A Ghost Story. You know, like the first time I watched A Ghost Story, really. It really moved me.
So what's kind of coming up next for you, Mitchell? What should we keep our eyes open for? And where's the best place to stay up to date with any of your latest news and work?
Instagram. My account, I'll make it private. I mean, I will make it public. It's private right now. But I love Instagram. I'm with Mitch is my Instagram. I have a TikTok. I'm with Mitch Talk. I'm just continuing to audition, continuing to, you know, grind and write and work on my own things. The next thing you can see me in will most likely be The Bannocking, which will be a show that's on CBC Gem, which is a free app. It's a horror comedy. I have a really great role in that. It was such a fun project to work on and be able to write characters, you know, like, I think growing up, in trying to be an actor, I would get a lot of, kind of racist auditions, you know, like there's been so many times when I've went to an audition and the audition was to be a drug addict or to be like an abusive boyfriend or be a drunk at a party or be a crackhead. I've been to so many auditions where I had to pretend to smoke a crack pipe. And, you know, like that's actually been one of the things that the hardest thing about the industry for me is that the roles that I go for, like I would leave auditions feeling like dirty, you know, feeling like just not good about myself. And that's kind of what the industry is like. You know, there's all these people trying to tell our stories where it should be us telling our stories. And it hasn't been too kind to indigenous characters. You know, we always kind of get the shorthand and, you know, play gangsters or, you know, so I've been trying to be a gangster for, like, you know, for 15 years of my life. And I think my one of my goals is to be able to write good characters for indigenous people to take on, you know, because we deserve good characters, and we deserve characters that are heroes, and you know, like, a lot of our characters are troubled and addicts, and I think my goal is to write really great characters and to be able to give somebody, like, a character that I would want to play, my dream character. And that's kind of what I'm doing right now, is I'm writing really good indigenous characters in my future, because yeah, we don't get that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing those roles from you, and I'm excited for it. And I just want to thank you so much, Mitchell, for coming on and sharing your experiences and insight. It's been a real pleasure to dive into First Cow with you. And I know you've listened to a lot of First Cow podcasts. You're now on a First Cow podcast, so you know it, time is a round circle.
Awesome. Yeah, it's been really good. I've been looking forward to this, and I just want to celebrate First Cow as much as I can.